Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast, the podcast that feels as though it's been a while, partly because it kind of has. I'm one of your hosts, John Bruford, joined by your other host, Fintan Costello. Fintan, hello.
Hello, John.
It's been a while.
It feels it, but you've been travelling, so...
The word you're looking for is gallivanting, Fintan. I've been gallivanting.
The taxman's listening.
Yes. Yes, because I believe
you mean
in the
you've
system
been on
of
work
taxation.
Business trips.
Yes, exactly.
Completely tax deductible work business trips.
To sunny Las Vegas. And do you know, one of the things I tried to find out while I was in Las Vegas, and we will do a whole episode about the Vegas trip.
I think we should.
Which would be probably the next episode because I'm really pissed off about some things. But one of the things I tried to learn while in Las Vegas was whether they employ meteorologists for Las Vegas television. Well, it's basically hot and fucking sunny in Las Vegas for 360 days of the year. Do they just have a record? Do they just record one day and then they turn up live for the 5 days where it might rain? 360 days of the year, Fintan. I think I may have found the world's easiest job.
Okay. Easier than this?
I don't know about that. Do you remember The Fast Show? Are you familiar with The Fast Show?
Yeah.
Okay, well, they used to do a thing on The Fast Show where it was Carolina Hearn. She would pretend to be a meteorologist on Spanish television. And she would say the name of a place and just have a little thing that she put on the board. And she'd go, Malaga, Scorchio. Vegas meteorology is like that. Las Vegas, Scorchio. It was very hot when I was there. And they had a heat wave in the UK, but I was, it's not weather to have no hair and be fat in, I tell you.
At least you got air conditioning in Vegas.
Too much. It's freezing inside. You're like, damn it, I wish I'd brought a cardigan.
Yeah. Do you know what else is hot?
What else is hot, Fintan?
Optimove.
Oh, do you know why they're hot?
I do, because they are the home of positionless marketing.
Yes, they are.
So they are. And if you want to use the number one player engagement solution for iGaming companies, iGaming and sports betting companies.
And sports betting, yeah, good call.
Is your choice. Go to optimove.com, tell them we sent you.
Yeah, that sounds very reasonable. Also, I'd like to just say that was seamless.
Been practicing.
But do you know what else is seamless, Fintan?
What else is seamless?
It's the service that GLI, Gaming Laboratories International, brings to its clients.
Tell me more.
Well, Fintan, today's episode of The Gambling Files is brought to you by Gaming Laboratories International, also known as GLI. GLI is a world-class testing, inspections, and certification company committed to delivering the highest quality land-based lottery and iGaming testing and assessment services around the world.
Wow.
I know, right? GLI provides suppliers, operators, and regulators with expert guidance for navigating the future of gaming and ensuring gaming innovations meet regulatory standards with confidence in more than 710 jurisdictions. That's a lot of jurisdictions. 710. I know, which is almost like 260s. That's how good they are. And you can get more information at gaminglabs.com. You know where else you can get more information, Fintan?
Where, John?
You can get more information at various expos and conferences around the gambling industry. And one of, if not the top organizer of such events, is World Gaming.
Mm.
Formerly known as Clarion.
Indeed.
And World Gaming's thing is just doing really awesome events.
Such as IGB Live, 1st to the 2nd of July, 2026.
Exactly. Exactly like that one. And like ICE, which is in Barcelona again in 2027, early 2027, end of January. And they do their thing. Do you know what I mean? They do their thing and they do it brilliantly. It's that simple.
Look, my diary for IGB Live is nearly full. Only a couple of slots left.
I should have booked you, shouldn't I? Damn it.
You make this mistake every time.
I really do. I wasn't planning on going, but then at the last minute I'll be like, I could just pop down. It's only a 3-hour drive and then probably another 45 minutes on trains, maybe more. Yeah, you're right. I'll stay here. I'll stay here in the sunshine. It won't be sunny here. I'm in Wales. But Fintan, have you been? How were you while I was away? Did you have fun?
John, it's not about me now. It's not about me.
Who's it about, Fintan?
It's about our guest.
We've got a guest?
We have a guest.
Who's our guest, Fintan?
You know, I'm really bad at name pronunciations. I get the easy ones wrong. Yeah. It's really embarrassing.
This is Terence Jones. No. We are joined by a guest. We're joined by Sergey Mikhailenko, who is the Chief Product Officer at Odds Market and BetBurger. I like the name BetBurger because I like a burger. Sergey, welcome.
Hello, guys.
Hey, Sergey.
Every time I say Sergey, my phone is lighting up because it thinks I might be saying Siri. Does Siri have a different name in Ukraine, Sergey?
It's Sergey, basically.
Yeah, that's what I said. Does what? Siri's name is Sergey, or your name is Sergey?
That's mine. But okay. You can name Siri in a different way, of course.
But it's not like a...
like Palenica. Why not? That's a Ukrainian word that is hard to pronounce.
Yes, it is. I mean, I could have gone for the cheap gag there and gone, that's easy for you to say. Sergey, I do have a question which is kind of unrelated to work. Who's your favorite Ukrainian footballer? Like, of all time and currently? Sorry?
Andriy Shevchenko, of course.
You say of course, right? But I was thinking of that Dynamo Kiev side that he was in, right? And they were amazing. But the main goal scorer was Rebrov, not Shevchenko. And Rebrov's only mistake was going to Tottenham.
They were a brilliant pair back then. And, you know, that Rebrov is a trainer. And he quit just a few days ago.
But at Dynamo?
Yeah.
Wow. Sad times.
So he's still there. When Shevchenko did a significant career all over the world and came back home now to support Ukrainians, and basically he is more of a businessman nowadays than a footballer, but definitely an icon. He uses his reputation up until now, so that's why I like him. He's still on a peak.
He was a great player. But I loved him as a player, and he was incredible at Milan, absolutely incredible at Milan. But when he came to Chelsea, I was disappointed. He was a shadow of his former self, and in the Premier League, it's too quick to. Yeah, he was still very good. He still had mad skills, but he didn't have any pace anymore, and. I think he struggled, and I think he'd probably admit that he struggled. It's just too damn quick. It's too physical. I wish he'd come when he was younger, because he would have eaten up the Premier League. He would have absolutely battered anybody. He was so good. But anyway, Sergey, thank you for joining us. So Odds Market and BetBurger, what's your bread and butter? What do you do? That was a big sigh there. That was a big sigh. Have I asked a bad question already?
Yeah, because we do a lot. So I was just thinking what to start from, what's in the core, because there are always some features in the core, and then you add some fruitful ones as well so that you cover more audience. I guess I can say that this is an arbitrage service. So the heart is the arbitrage. Arbitrage and sports betting. BetBurger is helping people to make money on arbitrage, on betting, for 13, 14 years. So it's pretty old service.
Sure.
Yeah. Fenton Market is basically the B2B side of a BetBurger, right?
Okay.
That is helping to protect sports books from the arbors and other types of sharp players.
Hang on a sec. So one side you got the B2C community, and then on the other side you got the B2B, and it's like, well, you know, if you want to protect yourselves from these
from clients, our other customers.
It'd be a shame if something happened to your sports book.
Please agree that this is a good diversification.
It's your classic like ice cream and umbrellas scenario, right? It's the perfect hedge.
Fenton,
years. Yeah, sorry.
I just wanted to check one little thing here because terminology, you know, is arbitrage known by any other names?
Arbing would be the kind of gambling lingo.
Sure bet is a popular word.
Or sure bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
14 years is a long time. Like that's a.
It is in the gambling industry.
Yeah, it is. It's like dog years. So if we start with BetBurger and then kind of move on to Odds Market, you've got like how does a normal arbitrage bet? Is it like okay, you bet one leg at the bookmaker, and then you bet another leg on a betting exchange, or what's the typical setup? Is it like you need to take a welcome bonus to make this work, or? How would a typical arbitrage bet be structured?
Yeah, that's what you're talking about is a matched betting. This is kind of arbitrage, but it engages a betting exchange, a lay bet, and a free bet that a bookmaker is giving you, a sports book is giving you. A classical arbitrage is the betting opportunity between two bookmakers, two sports books.
Mm-hmm.
Every second, every millisecond, if you are screening 100 sports books on the market, you can find an arbitrage because there are lots of sports, lots of markets, so it's not that hard. Historically, people are used to searching for them manually, but such services like BetBurger, they exist for a very long time, and we're definitely not the only ones.
Okay, so this is more like in-play type arbitrage betting. Explain to me the bet structure. So, like, let's say it's Champions League final, Arsenal versus PSG. What type, like, what are the bets I'd be placing where I can create the arbitrage opportunity?
Mm-hmm. Well, for such a high liquidity event like the final match of a championship, it's pretty hard to find an arbitrage, basically, because the odds are pretty accurate and very aligned between all the sports books on the market. But it's way easier to find such ones in the lower popularity events. And how exactly do you do this? You just bet on one leg that the first team will win, and then on another sports book you just bet on the opposite leg that the second team will win. If the odds are matching in a way that there is a guaranteed profit.
Yeah.
There are thousands and thousands of such situations every second, so this is not very hard to find, actually.
Okay, and then again, I'm not a hardcore more casino guy. So what happened, like, oh, because I bet on team A over here, I bet on team B over here, and if either of these teams win, I'm going to guarantee a profit. Mm-hmm. But then there's obviously situations where it's a draw, or like they've won in overtime rather than normal time. How does the maths account for kind of, yeah, basically how bet settlement works, like normal time versus extra time winning, or situations like a draw, which I'm assuming you've lost, right? You've lost both legs of the bet.
Well, if the draw is possible, so if we're talking about 1x2 market, then it's okay. Possible. If we're talking about money line market, so let's take not football, let's take tennis or whatever. So there are only two outcomes of a bet, right? And there is no room for a draw.
Understood. So is there, like with sports like soccer, then there are obviously still arbitrage opportunities?
Yes, absolutely. You can bet on 1x2 market as well. So you just bet on first team to win, and you also bet on draw no bet, mm-hmm. x2 basically, which will be the opposite.
Yeah. Okay. But then obviously it's from a, you know, one of the things we were talking about before we started, from a, you know, it's 2026, data and odds feeds and stuff are flying around the internet. So it's never been easier for a bookmaker to protect themselves. How has your business evolved in that world, and where's the consumer, like, where's the consumer demand going?
You mean the B2B, the sportsbooks demand?
Well, more like if we think of even the burger bet with the arbitrage betting and stuff. But obviously, arbitrage is a thing. But actually, is it more about like plus EV or value betting, or, you know, just being a sharper better rather than just straight up arbitrage?
Yeah. Okay. So. Let's admit that the arbitrage is still alive, and mm-hmm. Long live arbitrage. I guess the question is not in the reducing quantity of available arbitrage opportunities at every single moment of time, because it's not, because sportsbooks are adding more sports, adding more markets, etc., which are hard to manage in regards to setting the proper odds and following the odds updates properly. Where have they become more efficient is in the risk management process. I mean, the sportsbooks. Mm-hmm. So the average lifetime of an account at a sportsbook website is significantly shorter nowadays than it was years ago, than it was even 1 year ago. The situation is changing very rapidly. Mm-hmm. We can talk about AIs, etc., but it's not even because of that. It's because of the availability of the data in the world. Yeah. So there are a lot of data companies, there are a lot of data mining companies. It has become easier to collect the data, the data has become more widespread, etc. And the sportsbooks themselves, or better to say the sportsbook platforms, they have become more technologically advanced. They have all become the IT companies, IT first companies, let's put it like this. And if we're talking, if we take a look how this whole arbitrage or value bet market, sharp betting market looked like 10 years ago, the companies were like gambling first, betting first. So the majority of employees in the companies, they were experts in betting, and there were just a few developers that satisfied, that they just implemented their ideas. Now it's a completely different story, and everybody are investing a lot into super complicated risk management systems that detect not only the behavior of bets, of betting, but also wider factors like the IPs of the registration, geos, which payment methods are used, etc., etc. So basically, even before the first bet is placed, usually a sportsbook knows a lot about a user, and it's like 50%, 60% confident that it's a risky player or it's a recreational player.
Okay. And how, given the operators are so tech savvy, like it's never been harder to be an arbitrage better, right? So the speed or the ability to identify sharp money has never been easier too. So how are gamblers surviving in that world?
They become IT companies as well. So they do exactly the same as sportsbooks do. They acquire fast data, they adopt new techniques, they do constant testings of risk management systems of the books that they try to beat, trying to prolong the lifetime of an account.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this won't be a very big secret that the process of the procurement of the new accounts or collecting of the new accounts for such an activity is becoming also way more efficient, way more fast. So if 10 years ago you could have an account of yours and then an account of your mom and dad and your grandma and your grandfather, and that would be enough for you to make a good money. Nowadays, you need 50, 500, 5,000 accounts a year to maintain good revenue stream. And of course, you need an office and you need assistive people. You can pay them salary, whatever you want. This is how this industry evolved, and this is how the average, let's say, syndicate looks nowadays.
Mm.
So everything is transitioning to the revenue on sharp betting is transitioning to syndicates because they have budgets and they have more capabilities.
Yeah, that makes sense. We had Bernard Martinelli on a few months ago, who's that kind of syndicate, super smart. Like him signing up to your operation as a customer is probably the worst thing about to happen to you. One of the things we touched on with him, would be interesting to get your view, is the rise of prediction markets, which is like, you know, that early, there's a lot of dumb money floating around and there's a lot of sharp market makers on the other side of it. What do you see as the future for prediction markets?
First of all, absolutely, this is huge for the industry, for the sharp industry, because this is like a fresh breeze for them.
Mm.
Compared to where the whole industry was going to in regards to their risk management, Lately, many sportsbooks converted to the ones that just they became non-profitable for sharp bettors. So people just leave. So these people, this audience, just leave certain sportsbooks unattended anymore, because they just cannot make money. The lifetime value is so small that they cannot maintain their costs.
Yeah.
And this whole story with the prediction markets and the rising crypto sports books, crypto casino / sports books, this is really a fresh breath for them, because the KYC is very easy to pass. You give minimum information, and if we take Polymarket, Kalshi, and others, and other prediction platforms, it takes you seconds to register and start placing bets using your crypto, right? And also the crypto adoption,
yeah.
It is very well adopted in the developed countries and in the developing countries nowadays. So, like all stars are standing in a row for this kind of activity. So people are in a very big rush nowadays on making money on prediction market platforms because they understand that this is not going to last forever. Mainly because of two factors, probably. First is, of course, the regulations. Many countries in Europe already already are blocking these websites, including Ukraine, for instance. This is a gray market website for them. So the regulator just blocking IPs of Polymarket, for instance. And second, what the sharp bettors are afraid of is that the big capital will soon come to these platforms, and it will be way more complicated to make money there.
When you say big capital, what do you mean there?
I mean big players, big whales that use automation and that are just very efficient, that have very fast data and that can make money faster than the others.
But they already exist, like the, you know, the likes of Susquehanna and like these big like hedge fund, mm-hmm. high frequency trader type companies, plus the professional syndicates.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another type of
customer? Well, there will be more. Maybe we are talking months, right? Until everybody there were market taking.
It just becomes the market makers trading against each other.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So everybody, it's just a matter of time to switch or to add Polymarket to the automated betting portfolio, in addition to Betfair, for instance. So
yeah.
You know that on Betfair it's complicated nowadays to beat the market, even if you are using automation, if you are placing bets with a bot. That's not something that is still on Polymarket, but it will be. It will be soon.
Okay. Yeah. Which makes sense, because you would imagine there's a lot of arbitrage opportunities with these prediction markets versus traditional bookmakers. But even within the prediction market itself, there are these crazy arbitrage situations. Like I was reading one about the, I think it was Kalshi, but it was like, is Jesus going to come back this year?
Mm.
But then there's secondary markets on that Jesus market, and you could see that there was people manipulating the Jesus market to trigger the secondary market.
Yeah.
Which just like it's like layers of stuff, and like I'm not smart enough to do it, but you could imagine some smart people just sitting there just making their fortune.
Yeah.
Like it's that guy disturbing that you're following this. Sorry, Sergi.
Or like that guy with a fun near the meteor station.
Changing the temperature. Yeah. France or something. It's above 30 degrees in Paris today, and he wins his bet. And that's, you know, and without the inside information trading and stuff as well, which is obviously going on too. So you touched on crypto, and I think, you know, before the prediction markets boomed, crypto was obviously the big focus. And where do you see Obviously, you know, the way the industry is kind of happening is like you've got the gray markets being removed, and it's either white or black, and then, you know, prediction markets just on the side there, and we'll get to the, you know, they're sort of regulated. Is the rise of the crypto markets, you know, purely a function of easy KYC, or it's available in countries, or is it a marketing thing, or like how do you see the crypto space?
Okay, it's a question of leverage for a player between these two, the black and white. My point of view is that this is this tendency. I mean, the traffic flow and the liquidity flow from white sports books, classic sports books, to the crypto ones, which are a lot. Don't differ significantly from the normal ones. It's just a tendency because of the KYCs. They have become just very, very, very strict. And at the same time, using crypto is not something new anymore. Anyone can afford this. Anyone knows how to get this. So it's just a proper moment of time for people to switch to the platforms that offer less KYC. This is it. I don't see nothing bigger than that, actually. And of course, if we talk about the prediction platforms, what they offer is a little bit more than just the classic crypto sports book, because they offer not just sports. So it's also an entertainment for the people that are not into sports, but think that they are into politics or something like temperature, or something like that.
Because people who are into money.
Well, that's the thing. I think the prediction market, like obviously everybody's, there's a lot of commentary about the prediction markets saying, well, you know, we've had this with poker, we've had this with Betfair, the sharks are going to eat the fish.
Yeah.
And I believe that. So I've seen both and I get it, right? But then like meme coins exist and, you know, pump.fun and these kind of things. And I think there's a younger generation coming through with severe ADHD, get rich or die trying type attitude. Well, I don't know what it is, but like if pump fun exists and everybody knows it's bullshit, but they're still buying the coin and they're having fun on the hype and the Twitter threads and the Discord channels, whatever, and this is their lotto ticket to make some money, then something like a poly market existing or a prediction market existing in that universe to that audience, it does feel like there's probably something a little bit more there that wasn't there for poker or Betfair. And you know, and obviously you've got some structural things as well in the US where the prediction markets can take 18-year-olds, but the betting companies can't, and you know, you're in California, which is no regulated betting companies and stuff. So obviously there's some like structural artificial restrictions that give these guys a chance to flourish, but that's how DraftKings and FanDuel came about. It was like daily fantasy sports and they just smashed the US database.
Didn't they just call out their license in Delaware or somewhere just to launch the prediction markets platform?
They left the AGA. Was one of the things, and maybe they've done something else, but yeah, they've seen this playbook. Like they were literally, this was their playbook, you know, a regulatory arbitrage situation. And it's funny we're talking about arbitrage, right? This is just regulatory arbitrage. Mm-hmm. They were outspending all the beer companies on TV ads. They went for it. And it worked. Like they're the two biggest brands in the US. I think it'll be interesting. I don't think it'll play out exactly like Betfair and poker did. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I get your point as well with the crypto brands and like the lack of KYC, and it's just easy to open an account and nobody's asking me for a bank statement. But from a sharp better perspective, don't I also have increased risks of just not getting paid or not being able to withdraw my money? Like, what do you see happening in that space from a arbitrage sharp punter perspective?
Well, exactly. I look at all this mainly from the sharp betting, from a sharp better perspective, eyes of a sharp better. And that's why I said they can leverage between these two, the whites and the blacks, the greats, the grays, right? These guys, I mean, the sharp betters, the professional sharp betters, they are making money for their life, for their living with this. They are in a constant testing mode. Let's put it like this. They are constantly testing new strategies, constantly testing new sports books, and these can be purely regulated licensed ones and the crypto ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the test is done, they just compare. So if the lifetime value of an account on a purely, clearly regulated sportsbook is bigger than on a gray sportsbook, they will act there. They will not go to gray. For a recreational player, well, coming back to your question, can they be scammed at the gray sportsbook when they, at the same time, they can't be scammed by a regulated one? Well, from my point of view, they can be scammed in both. it's just a question. What do you name a scam? These people, they name a scam if their account is limited, right? Mm. This can happen on both.
Sure.
So it's not necessarily that an account on a gray sportsbook will be limited faster than on a white sportsbook. You just have to test this.
It's really interesting. I hadn't considered... And it's so obvious when you say it, the LTV perspective, because I used to be a casino affiliate, and the exact same methodology, right? We send 1,000 clicks to here, we send 1,000 clicks to there, we see what comes back. So regardless of like what the deal terms are, because conversion rates, retention, CRM, shaving, like all the shenanigans. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, you just break it down to like an earnings per click. You know, okay, if we send 1,000 clicks there, we know we're going to make X and we're going to make Y, and okay, X is now going to get 2,000 clicks.
Mm-hmm.
When you say it, it makes perfect sense that the sharp bettors would do the exact same thing. It's so obvious. And then obviously you're constantly testing and optimizing and making sure it doesn't change. So then if we flip to the B2B perspective, so obviously you've got the B2B arm as well, selling it to sportsbooks. Who can use your tools to manage their odds and their risk and their trading. Where do you see the growth markets for that?
In exactly the opposite. So there is still a very big room for the adoption of a proper risk management system for both the platforms and the operators. Because always, well, I'm talking to a lot of operators, and I'm talking to even more platform representatives. Not all of them are that technologically advanced.
Okay.
Still, when it comes to the platform, first, when you build a new platform, and you know there are already more than 100 of such ones, probably. Risk management, a proper risk management system, or the SHAR risk management system, is not something you you think at first. You think about the betting interface, you think about the acquisition engine, CRM system, whatever, right? And then you start building something to identify risky players. So there is still a room for them to improve the engine, the risk management engine, technologically, to develop a more advanced one. As for the operators, also what I'm seeing and what I'm very frustrated with is that it seems to me the absolute majority of them are still blocking people or limiting people just based on a single parameter, the profit. If a person overcomes a certain profit level, then it's a risky person, no matter what this person is doing, and etc. Especially, this is how gray ones behave. And this is pretty logical because they can allow themselves behaving like this. Because the cost of the traffic for them, the acquisition costs for such gray operators, they are lower because their KYC is simpler, because they don't have any additional restrictions by the regulator in the geos where they operate, etc. So that's why they can allow themselves to have not a very efficient risk management system and to just cut people off once they are successful.
It's really interesting when you think, like, because I've read before about, you know, really sharp sports books that would use sharp punters as a way to adjust their lines. So they would use it as like free market research or free, it's a data point, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, we know this player is sharp, and if they're betting on this, then it means our line is wrong and we need to adjust. And it was just the simplest, quickest way to, you know, find the right line and manage their book. Is that not happening because it's more of a tech team running things rather than a bookmaker, like a proper punter running things? Or like, why are they being so strict on, say, you know, managing a player to a P&L rather than adjusting the book and taking the action?
Well, this is one of the parameters that a risk management system or a risk management process of a sportsbook platform provider can consider, and they do it, but not all of them. That's what I was highlighting. So there is 100 sportsbook platforms on the market. The most, the biggest ones, the most successful ones, they have an advanced risk management system written by hands of many smart people over many years. And of course, they highlight such people that are using such opportunities to bet on more derivative markets, etc. But the final decision is often on the side of an operator. So basically, a risk management team of a platform provider, if they act as an outsourcing team for an operator or an automated algorithm of a risk management system, can decide to highlight a person, but the decision whether to limit the person or not is on the operator. It's up to them to decide. Of course, they can come to an agreement that there is a certain baseline when people get limited automatically, that this is always in place. But the absolute majority of operators, they are inexperienced with this. And they just choose an option somewhere in the middle.
They've
not being
the box.
Too sharp, not being too soft with the players. Yeah. So there is still a lot of players that are allowed to continue betting, but they are seriously profitable and they are pain in the ass for an operator, because an operator representative doesn't know what to do with them. And also you can think about this in this way. There are a lot of operators that are 5-10 people company.
Yeah.
So there is no professional risk manager, etc. They just cannot.
They're a white label. They've signed up 20 affiliates. We're going to make a load of money. And
exactly.
Then a sharp punter walks in the door and they haven't got a clue what to do.
Can I ask what might be a stupid question?
Please go. Okay.
And I'm really sorry if this is a stupid question. Okay?
There are no stupid questions.
That's a sincere apology.
Just stupid people.
You're in the wrong room to say a sentence like that, Sergi. No, okay, so you can do risk management to protect operators against sure bets.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that, right? In my heart, I know that there's probably a reason why what I'm about to ask is not that bright, but if I were doing this, if I were arbitrage betting, I wouldn't be looking at placing all the bets with one operator. I know operators, largely there is variance between operators on their bet odds. But I'd be looking, say you've got a tennis match, right?
Mm-hmm.
And say you've got, and I think this is the way that they display sort of odds in the US. Say we've got a plus 110 on a player to win this match. Then I'd be looking for the same odds with a different operator. Because surely that's, there's no fighting against that. That's just somebody betting on one thing with one operator and another thing with another operator, but it's the same kind of outcome, isn't it? See what I'm saying? I'm looking I'm looking for the mirror bet.
You're looking for the opposite. Yeah, that's right. So one of your bets will win, one of your bets will lose, and you'll make a
profit. But the profit is small, but the same, and it's essentially the same principle. But I'm just looking for it with multiple operators, because then surely I'm not going to be identified as an arbitrage better, even though that is in fact basically what I'm doing. Does that make sense?
Over time, you will.
I'll be identified.
Of course. Well,
that's why I don't get though, because I've got multiple accounts with multiple operators.
You're placing hundreds of bets, maybe thousands of bets.
Right, but you're only seeing one side of that. So how are you going to know what I'm doing elsewhere? You don't.
Because they'll also know when they were mispriced. So let's say it's the losing. Let's say I'm the guy with the losing bet. I'm the bookie that you placed the losing bet with. When I'm looking at my book over time, I'll start seeing that when I missed priced, when I've priced this market wrong, you've shown up, and I'll draw the conclusion. So even though let's say all your losing bets were with me, I'll identify you as a sharp because you show up every time.
But what if that market isn't priced wrong? What if the other operator's market is priced wrong? See what I'm saying?
I got the question because. Because this is very logical what you ask. So let me explain you how it works. There is, if you take two sports books and compare their lines, compare their odds, the matching odds, the exact same odds for the same markets and the same outcomes, there is always one book sharper than another one, right?
Yeah.
So it's a question of trading, of proper sports trading. So the traders of one bookmaker, of one sports book, are more successful, more accurate, more right than the others. So if you just compare two sports books, there is always one that is making more money on the exact same bets, right? This is is happening for some reason. This is happening because the traders, the trading line of one sports book is sharper than another. This means that if you will be placing arbitrage bets between these two, over time, you will be a losing player on one book and a winning player on another.
Okay. Right?
So the winning, not significantly losing player on one book, but significantly profitable on another. So the another one will block you because you are successful.
Sure.
And then you will have to find another pair. So you're picking the third one.
But that's assuming that those two are consistently doing what I want. In all likelihood, if I'm doing this, I'm going to have 20 accounts. And I'm just going to be looking for those individual. And I know this is what I'm talking about is a laborious way to do this. I'm just saying that this would be an absolute pain in the ass to stop because you never place the same bet with the same person. It wouldn't be the same sport with the same person. You're just looking for those bets that are in a two-horse race, the mirror image of each other. Because that's the heart of it, right?
But it's volume over time, I think, is the other element. It's just the sheer volume of bets across all the bookmakers. It's the betting. It mightn't even be like the P&L is a signal, but it mightn't even be the P&L. Like it could just be.
But then you might just be saying, "Oh, this guy's betting loads. Let's ban him."
Oh no, but it could just be like
on problem gambling guy, solved.
Did this guy's too good at NFL? Restrict him on NFL. Right, he can do all he wants on horse racing, but NFL's not for him. Or so, like, so you can just get the traders will just after a while just spot stuff they don't like about you and just restrict you.
My haircut,
that kind of thing.
Yeah. I've got another question, and it's not as stupid as the last one. So we've got the World Cup coming up, biggest sporting event in the world, basically. Now football obviously has enormous variables, but it's also like these days you very rarely see a mispriced football match, certainly in my experience. I have seen some in the past, I have lumped on them and I have done great. Still a lot of luck involved where I'm betting, but what I was wondering is, so obviously football, loads of variables and millions of different kinds of bets and blah, 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 right? But are there particular sports that are, I don't know how to put this, that are more attractive to arbitrage betting? Like, is arbitrage betting, does it matter what the sport is? Is it sports where it's an individual against an individual as opposed to team sports, or could it be sports that are maybe more niche and are therefore less monitored or that a bookmaker might be less knowledgeable about? So for example, that game with the goat's head played on horseback in Afghanistan. You know what I'm saying? Like that do those factors influence the appeal to an arbitrage bettor?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and it's actually a very wide question. Smashed it. First, I should say is that coming back to the strategies testing, I told you that these guys, they are in constant testing of the lifetime of an account with different betting strategies, right? So every moment of time, there are tons of arbitrage for football and tons of arbitrage for curling. You can place bets to any sport you like if there are opportunities. However, if you will be placing bets on low popularity sports, or more than that, more derivative markets like yellow cards, corners, and stuff like that, there is a bigger chance you are spotted as a risky player by the risk management system of a sports book earlier. So placing bets on top-level divisions, top-level championships of football matches to the main markets, like 1x2, Moneyline, whatever, can be harder. So you will place less bets because there are not so many arbitrage opportunities for that particular market, for the most popular sport in the world. But it's way harder to spot you because millions of other people in the system are placing bets to exact these same markets, this exact same sport. But if you are placing bets to some unpopular sports, let's take, I don't know, esports. It can be esports. You can place bets on e-soccer for some reason, e-basketball, whatever. Badminton, for some reason. And especially if you place bets to e-soccer and badminton throughout the same day, most probably you don't care what exact sports and what exact markets you want to bet on from the perspective of a risk manager of a sports book. Most probably you are doing just automated picks and place for profit.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I hope that explains, that opens your question.
Yeah, it does. Fenton, you got any questions?
I think we've covered everything.
Sergey, have you got any questions?
No, I think I don't. My main question, guys, is whether you like the conversation.
Oh, look, it's fascinating. I love. It was one of those. I love this sector because, like, I remember in college, like studying economics and learning about the efficient market hypothesis that everything's priced in and there's no arbitrage opportunities available in the stock market. And then my first job out of college is with a market making firm called Susquehanna, and they're just sitting there all day long arbitraging the shit out of different markets. And then you meet professional gamblers who are doing the same thing, and it's just like, oh no, the economics book is bullshit. There's loads of opportunities out here, and arbitrage is a vital part of the stock market, or part of efficient markets, because it gets to the true price quicker. But I'd love to be smart enough to be able to do it, but I'm that's why I'm in marketing, not trading.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it now.
It's free money.
Yeah, seems to be. And I've got an inside man.
You do. Fascinating topic, and yeah, it's brilliant. So thanks so much. So where can people find you? So if people want to connect and say, hey, this is brilliant, let's have a B2B conversation, or I'd love to get a subscription, where should they go?
I guess LinkedIn is the best place.
Perfect. We'll make sure we'll have tagged you on this on LinkedIn and stuff anyway, so it'll be easy for people to find you.
Yep, and anybody that wants a link to Sergey's profile on LinkedIn, it's in the show notes. Sergey, thank you very, very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for this conversation, guys. My pleasure.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You can find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.